Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Sunday, November 1st, 2020. Section A. Candidates talk transparency. Some want meeting time changes and more transparency, by Michael Merlot. Transparency in city government has been in the news this election season, and with the mayor's seat up for grabs, as well as three hotly contested city council positions, there could be a whole new look to Odessa's city leadership come 2021. Candidates were asked about transparency as well as their thoughts on an ongoing lawsuit brought by the Odessa American against the city in January to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police report records. The city has spent more than $60,000 so far to fight releasing timely crime information to both the newspaper and the public. It is the second lawsuit brought by the OA in recent years dealing with government transparency. The first was in 2017 and alleged the City Council violated state open meetings laws. That lawsuit was settled in 2018. The city also agreed to reimburse $12,500 of the newspaper's legal fees. While some Odessans have criticized the current city council as being effectively unaccountable for open government obligations under state laws, council candidates recently spoke about open meetings and public information as being key to gaining public trust and helping keeping the citizens of Odessa informed. In addressing the newspaper's current lawsuit, mayoral candidate Javier Joven said if elected, he hopes to do as much as he can in the name of transparent government. Who suffers here is the public. For the reason is, I think, I see this as a very minute issue that the city is holding steadfast of their position, he said. How can we not just sit down and work this out without litigation? And it just seems that the city, in every instance, it just keeps bowing up and saying, you know, what this is, our position, and we're going to see it through at the expense of the public and public monies. Incumbent Mayor David Turner, who is seeking the at-large city council seat, said some police records should not be released, such as social security numbers and other sensitive information that could be used in identity theft or the names of juvenile sexual assault victims. Odessa American publisher Patrick Canty said such information has never been sought by the newspaper or any other reputable news organization and has never been included in basic police reports to which the public is entitled. Turner also spoke on having the council meetings live streamed, but noted that it would cost the city money to get the equipment to do so. None of that technology is cheap. You'd probably have to put in 4 or 5 cameras just to have a good view and upgrade the audio because the audio would have to be of better quality, he said, adding that the information should be better cataloged so that people could look up specific meetings online. Joven also spoke on what he would do if elected for the sake of informing the public. Everything that has to be on the forefront. I don't like the fact that we're having workshops where attendance is even more scarce than the city council. Everything should be done at the city council. Everything. The proposals, the workshops. We're not going to increase attendance by the public, so it's our responsibility as a public entity, all public entities, to get the information to the public, he said, adding that every avenue should be exhausted to inform citizens. He said that in the past he has spoken to the media to get the word out regarding decisions facing the community and city council. Some people saw it as boasting or trying to garner attention. I used it as a means to communicate, he said. He also spoke about how citizens should be able to speak and have more discussion with council members during meetings, further explaining that the three-minute comment period should be broadened. Hoven's opponent, Gloria Apolinario, said the city should not have appealed a recent ruling by a visiting state district judge who denied a motion by the city to dismiss the newspaper's lawsuit. It's more burden to the taxpayers because we are the ones paying for those lawyers, she said. In government, everything should be transparent because it's also the people's records, she said. That's why the Freedom of Information Act was created. And I think we should all follow that, not only in Odessa, but nationwide, because that's how you should run government. Apolinario said that the people need to know what is happening so they know what decisions to make as well as who to vote into office. She added that if elected, her office would have an open-door policy. She spoke about having a citizen advisory board made up of around 5 or 7 citizens in each district to meet with council members. I'm going to dedicate a telephone number for the office of the mayor so people can call in, and I'll have volunteers who man it. And what's going to happen is if anybody needs help from the city, we can just refer them to the department, she said, further saying that she would like to dedicate a website for the mayor so people could reach her as well. She spoke on increasing public interaction in council and said that there should be a council for people to be heard too, which would be separate from the advisory board. If it's public information, then it needs to be released unless they are protected under the law, District 1 City Council candidate Eddie Mitchell said in reference to the city's current legal dispute with the newspaper. He said he personally did not think the names of victims of certain violent crimes should be published, but added that the public and the news media should be able to get that public information. Mitchell said if elected, he would advocate for making sure the community knows what we, the council, are going to do or what we're trying to do. And you never know, we may get some good input from the community that might help us in our decision making. He said there needs to be more input from the community, something he believes is hindered by the fact that council work sessions occur before noon, Tuesdays. I'm for going back to them at 6 o'clock meetings, where the community can come, he said. The city council, even me, we're not the smartest people in the world, but people voted for us and put trust in us to try to make things better. Mitchell's opponent, Mark Mata, had similar sentiments regarding meeting times. I think one thing we need to do is to make the meetings more accessible to the public, he said, of the 10 a.m. work sessions. Let's do it where it's more open for people to come in, and with the advent of social media and websites and whatnot, there are so many more avenues to get the word out to people, he said, adding that the council needs to go above and beyond when giving public notices. Put it on the social media, he said. Let the people know that there's going to be an important meeting going on and not just a public notice on the front door of City Hall. Mata also spoke on the current open records lawsuit in which the newspaper is challenging the city over its practice of redacting public information from public crime records and not releasing those records in a timely manner and in accordance with state law. I feel right now that the current council is trying to kind of usurp their authority of this public information records lawsuit, Mata said, adding that he doesn't believe any member of city council has the right to be exempt from public information laws. Part of the job is being held accountable by the press, he said. This is a First Amendment issue, basically, the freedom of the press. Y'all have that. And even though sometimes it can get annoying, but that's their job. Their job is to cover the stories that sometimes may be uncomfortable. That's the job of the press, to make sure that the citizens know what's going on. At-large City Council candidate Latasha Gentry said she believes public records should be made accessible to the community, and it shouldn't be a long process. If it's public, then it should be easily accessible to the public, Gentry said. What's the point if you request it today and then you get an answer 2 weeks later, she said. That's not really news. Gentry said that in the past, she knows city council meetings have been recorded and sometimes they have been uploaded, but not until about 2 weeks later. If I could get on the city council, I would really want for there to be no more than 48 hours for it to be updated to the site and YouTube, she said. A quick turnaround on uploading those meetings is a benefit for the public, Gentry said. They're meeting regularly, she said. They're meeting every 2 weeks, and there's those study sessions in between. So it needs to be updated within 2 days so people can stay current, and that allows transparency because technically they are transparent because they are posting it, but it's posted a little later than it should be. District 1 candidate Tiki Davis also spoke on what he hopes to do for transparency in city government. I'm just going to try and be open and as transparent as I possibly can with the knowledge that I can share with the public. So I would just say when it's a city council meeting and it's open to the public, I would just advise everybody to attend, he said, because whoever is elected is not going to be able to get all the information every time. So whatever I miss, I hope there's somebody else that can pick it up. Davis said every citizen should be informed on what's happening in city government and be able to get that information. If I knew information that I could share with the citizens on the constituents of that district, if I'm elected, I'll release them freely, he said. District 2 candidate Rachel Miner said that open meetings are the law. Right now, there's a lawsuit going between the city and the OA, if I'm understanding things correctly. So I think that everyone should obey the law, she said. The more transparency you have, the more people trust you. And the city really needs to build some trust back with the citizens and the departments. When it comes to meetings, Miner said she'd like to see more people involved. All you can do is make it welcoming for people, she said, adding that there is always a need to do better when communicating with the public about meeting times, availability, projects, and processes. Miner's opponent, Steve Thompson, said that he doesn't like the fact that the OA had to sue the city over information. Thompson said that there shouldn't be a gray area in what information should be released, and said that in his mind it's black and white with what is public information. He added that the way the public information has been released lawfully in different cities and police departments is the way it should be done. Whatever it is, he said. We need to release whatever we can release except for the names who are listed in a sexual assault. Mayoral candidate Dewey Bryant, at-large council candidate Denise Swanner, at-large candidate Joanne Davenport-Littleton and District 1 candidate Michael Shelton did not return phone calls for this story.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Monday, November 2nd, 2020. This is Section A, the front page. This article is entitled, Trump Signs Symbolic Memo in Support of Fracturing. Memorandum Order Study on Impact of Prohibiting or Restricting the Technology by Justin Sink and Josh Wingrove, Bloomberg. President Donald Trump signed a symbolic memo in support of the fracturing sector during a four-rally swing through Pennsylvania, a crucial battleground in Tuesday's election. The president issued the memorandum on Saturday, ordering his governments to study the effects of quote, prohibiting or sharply restricting the use of hydraulic fracturing and other technologies, unquote, and the national security impact of doing so. Trump sees full-throated support for fracking as a crucial element in Pennsylvania, where he's trailing Joe Biden, and which would likely clinch the presidency for the Democrat should he win it. Biden's platform is an economic death sentence for Pennsylvania, Trump said on Saturday, repeating an inaccurate claim that Biden plans to ban hydraulic fracturing. The Democrat has said will transition away from fossil fuels, and his campaign is pledging to ban new oil and gas permits on public lands and waters. Trump signed his order while flying between his second and third rallies of the day. He immediately touted it on Twitter and exaggerated its impact. "Moments ago, I signed an order to protect Pennsylvania fracking and block any effort to undermine energy production in your state," he said. The memorandum doesn't block anything and instead orders a series of studies. The American Petroleum Institute welcomed the action in a statement released Sunday, shortly after the order was released. Both Democrats and Republicans recognize the importance of this innovative technology, which supports millions of jobs across the country, said IPA President Mike Summers.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Odessa American for Monday, November 2nd. Tuesday is Election Day in the U.S. There is one last chance to make your voice heard at the polls this year, and Tuesday is it, as races from president to mayor of Odessa will be decided. And what an election season it has been. Early voter numbers have broken records around Texas in 2020, and in Ector County, 35,513 were cast as early voting ended on Friday. The Texas Tribune detailed that early voters have turned out statewide and that more than 9 million Texans had cast their ballots, making up 53.1% of the state's registered voters, surpassing the state's total votes cast in 2016. The Tribune also detailed that around 47.6% of those people voted in person and 5.6% have voted by mail. Ector County Elections Administrator Lisa Certucci said that this year, early voter turnout has surpassed the 2016 total of 26,377 early voters. An Ector County Elections Office November 2016 cumulative report detailed that the combined number of early votes and Election Day votes came out to a total of 37,284 ballots cast. Certucci said that 10,907 votes were cast on Election Day in 2016. Ector County voters will have a total of 25 polling places that will be open from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. Tuesday. Certucci said that she believed all the vote centers will be steady and that all the polling places will most likely have lines. Aside from the presidential election, this year's ballot contains multiple regional and city elections, including Odessa City Council, Mayor's election, U.S. Representative for District 11, U.S. Senator, Railroad Commissioner, Chief Justice Supreme Court, Justice Supreme Court spots, among others. Different area sample ballots can be located at https://tinyurl.com/y52q8vn9, and state voting statistics via the Texas Tribune can be located at https://tinyurl.com/majzz4v. Practice social distancing for voting. This is a guest column written by Carol Cates, the chief nursing officer at Odessa Regional Medical Center. Tomorrow is the day we all get to go to the polls and exercise the right that so many Americans from the Revolution all the way to the modern conflicts in Iraq and Afghanistan have died to protect, our right to vote. President Lincoln, in the Gettysburg Address, said, "That these dead shall not have died in vain, that this nation under God shall have a new birth of freedom, and the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth." He, of course, was talking about the Civil War and salvaging the nation from that conflict. But his words apply each time we step to the polls and cast our votes. Voting ensures that these dead shall not have died in vain. Voting preserves our democracy. Your vote makes sure that government of the people, by the people, and for the people continues to stand. No matter your political leanings, tomorrow please take part in the duty we all have to those who have sacrificed so much for this country. Vote. Having said that, we remain in a pandemic, and we are again seeing a surge in COVID cases here in the Permian Basin. One of the things I know is of great concern to many people is how to exercise the right to vote while still staying safe at the polls. Both the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and the Texas Department of State Health Services have several recommendations for voters to help them stay safe as they vote. The CDC recommends, when voting, stay socially distanced from others, try to keep 6 feet between yourself and other people, particularly if others are not wearing a mask. Wear a mask which covers your mouth and nose while at the polling station. Take care when touching surfaces and wash your hands and/or use hand sanitizer frequently. If you can, consider going to the polling station at non-peak times, like mid-morning, so you can more easily social distance. If you can, avoid taking kids to the polling station so you can decrease their risk of exposure. Try to limit your time in the polling station. One way to do that is to look at a sample ballot online and make your choices before you go into the polling station so you can fill out your ballot quickly. Hector County has sample ballots by precinct on their website at www.co.hector.tx.us. DSHS also recommends practicing good cough etiquette by coughing into a tissue and disposing of it into a trash can, followed by good hand hygiene. They also recommend self-screening for COVID prior to entering a polling station. If you have any of the following symptoms, cough, shortness of breath or difficulty breathing, chills, repeated shaking with chills, muscle pain, headache, sore throat, loss of taste or smell, diarrhea, feeling feverish, or a measured temperature greater than or equal to 100 degrees Fahrenheit, or known close contact with a person who is lab confirmed to have COVID-19. In those cases, DSHS recommends you consider curbside voting. They recommend you contact the county elections office with questions about curbside voting if you feel this is the best option for you. In Hector County, that number is 432-498-4030. DSHS also recommends you bring your own pen or marking instrument to the polling location if possible, and that you bring your own hand sanitizer to use before and after voting. You may be asked to lower a face mask to verify identity at the polling location. DSHS recommends you do so, but then replace it over your nose and mouth as soon as possible and for the remainder of your stay in the polling location. Basically, the same etiquette that helps limit the spread of COVID in all public spaces, like grocery stores, will work while voting too. Social distance, wear a mask, and wash your hands. Those are the things that will keep us safe tomorrow as we vote and moving forward until we have vaccines and other preventatives for COVID-19. Be safe tomorrow and every day, and please vote.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Sunday, November 1, 2020. Viewpoints. District 4. Joel Dial, District 4 candidate. Trustees' leadership should be called into question. Currently, every MISD school board seat on the ballot is challenged and current members face being ousted because MISD is failing our community. Taxpayers are pressured for more funding. Our schools consistently remain below minimum standards, and our teachers are underpaid. MISD spent $9.5 million on land for a new school without funds available for construction, teachers, administration, or bus drivers, and leased the property back to the original owners for only $1 per year. Schools are overcrowded and demoralized. Basic infrastructure like air conditioning and running water are failing district-wide due to the misuse of funding, Yet MISD continues to bully the people who are most aware of these problems for more money, like a desperate junkie looking for their next fix. Midland not only deserves, but should expect accountability, financial transparency, and prudent spending from MISD. I'm from a family of educators and graduated from Midland High committed to returning from college to sincerely and truly serve our community as an educator and help solve the mess in MISD. My family had reservations about my goals. Knowing the challenges I face have caused too many top-quality, lifelong educators to retire, hopeless and disgusted by MISD's corruption. My detractors say I'm too young. I say we need youthful vigor, idealism, and principled character to fix MISD. My detractors have libeled me with blatant lies while I've focused on deep dives into MISD's failure and developed strategies to help our schools succeed. I've been scolded for getting into the weeds on these issues. I challenge that I am more knowledgeable about the issues facing our schools than all of my opponents combined, demonstrating their lack of concern for our schools and commitment to our students. I've committed hours of research and analysis that should be expected by one seeking this unpaid position. While schools, businesses, and government struggle to forge a path forward in the face of COVID, MISD buried its head in the sand, busying itself with virtue signaling by changing the name of Lehigh School instead of developing a plan for teachers and students to safely begin the school year with minimal disruption and proper oversight. Teachers, parents, and students have all been forced to struggle with learning to use hastily acquired online platforms. Teachers being limited only to grading assignments from the equally disconcerted students that choose to participate only burden an already struggling education process. Those without internet access are issued laptops, many of which are missing buttons and even held together with duct tape. Students that were already most at risk now go without supervision and don't participate at all, leaving teachers powerless and students apathetic and prey to drugs and crime. My opponents only offer rhetoric, not solutions, like the innovations at Travis Elementary. MISD should be praising and emulating this process, safely bringing teachers and students back into the classroom. I don't believe the people of District 4 are so superficial to fall for the semantic games and misrepresentations my campaign has had to deal with. I believe District 4 is sick and tired of being neglected and overlooked by MISD and wants someone to stand up for them, unafraid to say that Midland is fed up with MISD. Like all Texans, I'm grateful for individuals that have served admirably in military and law enforcement, positions I am not qualified for. Likewise, I am the only candidate in this race that is even remotely qualified for the job. It's easy to spend money and say the right things in interviews, yet change results from passionate, informed action. To all those that I've met while walking door to door over the past weeks, to those that have allowed me to place a sign in their yard, I humbly thank you for your support. One campaign, one board member, is only the start. Katie Wallace Joyner, District 4 candidate. New chapter at MISD requires strong leadership. Education in Midland must improve. We need a fresh perspective on the board to bring new ideas and make changes to improve academic outcomes for students. A vote for me, Katie Wallace Joyner, is a vote for change, a vote for commitment, and a vote for strong leadership. It will be my mission to continually ask questions and urge my fellow board members to consider all the options, not just those presented to the board. It is time for action. It is time to begin a new chapter at MISD. As a third-generation Midlander and an MISD graduate and parent, I am ready to see our district live up to its potential. We need to unleash the creativity of our educators and embrace new ideas. The board can help facilitate this by hiring the right superintendent, being proactive, and fostering an environment of support for our campuses. As a board member, I want to start a new narrative of success and open-mindedness. We cannot continue to operate in the same manner just because it's the way things have always been done. We need to replicate our successes and learn from our mistakes. Accountability has been lost. and trust needs to be restored. Wholesale changes must occur at every level, starting with the board. As your District 4 representative, I will dedicate my time and energy to encouraging, empowering, and equipping the educators of MISD. Having served on many boards in our community, I will bring my experience and best practices to the operations of the MISD board. Communication is key in creating a new and improved MISD. My interpersonal skills and willingness to engage will be a crucial step in making the board's decision-making processes clear. Parents and staff need a new superintendent that will provide important information in a professional and effective way. My degree from the College of Communications at UT Austin enables me to vet a top-notch superintendent with a focus on excellent communication. Transparency goes hand in hand with communication. There cannot be one without the other. When policy and decisions are made, I will work to ensure that all the facts are considered and are readily available to the public. Transparency within the district and at central office will improve with the right leadership in place. As a former project manager, it was imperative that my clients knew exactly how their projects were being executed, who was on the team, and that expectations were being met. The same is true in creating transparency within MISD. Currently, there are not any women serving on the Board of Trustees. Electing a female leader will lend a fresh new perspective to the conversation. Each decision that the board makes will have a direct impact on my family. But I am not running just for my children. I am running to represent all of District 4 and all MISD students. It would be my privilege and honor to be the voice of mothers all across our city. Our community is currently working to survive a global pandemic and a terrible economic crisis. It's in these tough times that Midlanders can and should pull together. MISD is currently in a state of transition, and we have the opportunity to unify under the common goal of excellent education for every child, regardless of zip code. This campaign has been some of the most exciting, exhausting, and truly amazing months of my life. I have had the privilege of meeting so many new people and listening to the District 4 voters. There have been many nights of knocking doors with just my little family and a wagon of yard signs working to earn your trust and your vote. It was on those evenings that I was most struck by how incredible our community really is and why I decided to run. I know the path won't be easy, but I want to do the hard work to change things for the better. It takes true grit to live out here in the oil patch, but we are, at our core, go-getters. That mentality and spirit is what I was raised on, what I have implemented in my professional life, and what I will bring to the board. Thank you to all who have supported me along the way and who have already voted for me. For those of you going to the ballot box on November 3, please vote for me, Katie Wallace Joyner, MISD District 4. Steve Vargas, District 4 candidate. Time to return trust, hope to the system. My name is Steve Vargas, and I am running for the MISD District 4 trustee seat. I have four children, all of which have attended MISD schools since their schooling began. Through the years, I've witnessed the decline and regression of our academics with no end in sight. I have witnessed the mistreatment, retaliation, and misrepresentation of our citizens, teachers, and faculty. My children, along with the misrepresented teachers, citizens, and children across Midland, are my motivation to becoming a Midland ISD trustee and becoming the voice for so many who have lost trust and hope in our current system. I have sat around for at least 8 years and witnessed the injustice as our children's futures become uncertain. MISD continues its rapid academic decline and underperformance, with no resolve or accountability for those responsible with aiding in its downfall and normalization of mediocrity and underperformance. I have talked and listened to teachers and parents who have expressed the same concerns with major issues facing our schools. Students, teachers, faculty, and parents have all lost trust and confidence in our current school board and central office administration for their role in this decline and the standards they have set. Due to the continued lack of accountability, transparency, and leadership through MISD, I decided to step up and help become part of the solution and deal with these key issues head on. I hope to bridge the divide between the hardworking citizens of Midland and the current board and to restore their trust and confidence in MISD so that we can work together and remediate the broken system we currently have. It's about time we provide our children with the greatest opportunity to succeed. Now is the time to seize the opportunity and make the right decision by electing someone who will ensure our children are provided the greatest opportunity to succeed. It's time we get MISD pointed in the right direction. The right direction that ultimately leads to improved academics for our children across the board. The right direction that ensures our teachers are given the proper tools and resources to provide the best opportunity for the success of our children. It's time that we listen to those on the front line, those that have addressed the issues and have already begun to implement ways to improve them. It's time to give our teachers back their voice and let them know that we hear them and that we are listening and support them. Academics should be the main concern of the current school board and new incoming board members. But it raises the question of why our academics are in such a state of decline and underperformance, and what countermeasures do we need to implement to turn it around. I think we have to begin with the leadership at the top by setting the example and holding people accountable for their participation in such a rapid decline. Through leadership and accountability, we can ensure that we are retaining quality staff across the board and cutting those who are not willing to be part of the solution, improving our current state. We will then be able to provide our children with the proper teachers, resources, and staff that will provide them with the greatest opportunity to succeed and prepare them for their futures. I believe this is a key way to improve academics. I have always felt a calling to serve. Even as a child growing up, I always had that feeling calling out to me. Shortly after high school, that feeling called me to serve my country as a Marine. Through my time in the Marines, I learned what true leadership was. I learned what key traits were required for a leader to be successful: accountability, integrity, intestinal fortitude, tact, judgment, decisiveness, initiative, unselfishness, moral courage, loyalty, and most importantly, the ability to admit when you are wrong. Shortly after leaving the Marines, I still had that feeling to serve. That feeling called me over to becoming a state trooper. Through my time as a peace officer, I have learned what it truly means to be a humbled servant of the community. As November is nearing, remember what we have to gain and what is at stake. We have the opportunity to make a huge difference and give our citizens back their voice. Let's rise up together and remind MISD that we citizens hold the power. A vote for Steve Vargas for District 4 will ensure that you are all heard and represented. District 1. Michael Booker, District 1 candidate. We can no longer watch adults fail our students. First, I want to thank and give all honors to God for giving me this opportunity to put my name out there and to be a part of this experience in running for the school board. I have said it from the beginning of my campaign. I do not have to and will not belittle my opponents to make myself go further in this election. I think when we are standing up for kids, we must be the example, and I will not teach my sons to be a bully with my actions. That is not what I want to teach my boys about making our community a better place. I have to say that I have the utmost respect for everything Mr. Fuller has done for our community. I think he has helped make our community more inclusive in his 30-plus years of service, and I, for one, will always be grateful for that. I also have the utmost respect for Mr. Galindo for being an involved parent and for wanting to make a difference in our community. I refuse to participate in belittling my opponents in hopes of furthering my cause. I can just no longer sit by and watch the adults fail our students. We have 9 failing campuses, and some of these campuses have been failing for a long time. I can no longer sit by and watch the communication between our board and our community decline. Our board voted to purchase Ranchland Golf Course without listening to how our community felt about it. They voted to canvass a bond when they knew there were 740 votes missing. It was not their responsibility to find the votes themselves, but it was well within their moral obligation to wait and see if the votes could be found. It's time that our district be held accountable for the choices they have made that are resulting in failing our kids. I have 4 amazing boys that I love and care for tremendously. I cannot be the example that my children need if I sit back and do nothing about those failures. I want to be a part of making our community better. It is important for me to see not only my kids succeed, but the kids that live down the street from me, and the ones that live across town. We have the foundation to make our campuses across Midland thrive. Our teachers are phenomenal. We just need someone that sits in that seat for District 1 that will ensure that our teachers get what is needed to be set up for success. We need someone there that holds themselves and the district accountable moving forward. The adults can't only be taking credit for the positive things happening in our district. They have to take responsibility for the failures, too. It's time we have a leader who is ready for the responsibility of listening to our community. District 1 deserves that. I am running to be the voice that represents the constituents of District 1. I want to be a part in making our academic performance rise above the minimum grade level of a C. I want to help create and maintain a safe and secure environment for the teachers and students at our secondary schools. I know that I am not the best public speaker. However, I am working on that skill. But something I do have is a big heart. I love kids and I love people. My experience working at the Barbara Culver Detention Center with troubled youth made it easier for me to have a better outlook on those kids. I mentored those kids day in and day out. Kids need to know that no matter what troubles they encounter, they can overcome that and become any and everything they want to be as long as they set their minds to it. I have enjoyed hosting foreign exchange students and taking the time to really sit down with these students that come here with a language barrier and help them with their schoolwork. That experience has really opened my eyes to how important quality education is. I hope and I pray that I am the candidate that you want to represent, you and District 1 for MISD. I want to see all our kids succeed. I hope you vote for me, Michael Booker, for District 1. I am in the second spot on the ballot. Matt Galindo, District 1 candidate. Much needed change about academics, trust. Running for the MISD school board has been very exciting, something I never imagined I would do. Like most parents, I want what is best for my children and am willing to do whatever it takes to ensure they are well taken care of and receive the best education possible. Over the last few months, I have had the privilege of meeting great and supportive parents, grandparents, and community members in District 1. Walking the streets and going door to door allowed me to get a better understanding of what exactly they want from MISD and their future board representative. Some conversations were great, while others were uncomfortable but very necessary for us to be able to move forward as a community and do better for our babies. I'm grateful for all those that took the time to meet with me and expressed their desire for much-needed change in District 1. Academic improvement is and will be a top priority as a board member. It starts by hiring an experienced, laser-focused superintendent dedicated to working and respecting teachers, parents, and the community. He or she will also need to make accountability one of their top priorities, ensuring his or her administration do what is necessary to improve academics and take responsibility for shortcoming when needed. My vision is to have leaders within the district that are willing to address and resolve the real issues facing academics rather than sweeping them under the rug or bring in a third party to take care of what we failed to do in the first place. Maintenance and operations will also be one of my top priorities. As a maintenance scheduler, I understand the importance of preventative maintenance and am looking forward to seeing improvements within our schools in the near future under the direction of our new Chief Operations Officer. I am also looking forward to eventually being part of a board that will be bringing a much-needed, fiscally responsible bond to address secondary and middle school needs. Trust me, I understand the trust issues that this current board created throughout the community. It will take time, transparency, and communication to heal those wounds, but I am hopeful that we will eventually come together as a community to provide our students with the facilities and safety they deserve. At the end of the day, I am just Matt, a dad from East Midland wanting better for my babies and yours as well. I am hoping to bring my experience as a proven leader and perspective of a working parent to the board in hopes of bettering our children's education and future. thank you to all those that have extended your support and even feedback. Both have made me a better candidate and person. Regardless of the outcome of this race, I am dedicated to advocating for all students and working with whoever represents District 1 for years to come. My name is Matt Reyes Galindo, and it would be an honor and privilege to represent you and your family as the new MISD School Board Trustee for District 1. District 2. Rachel Davis, District 2 candidate. MISD's board must stop settling for excuses. A question we have all been asked throughout this election cycle is why? Why do we want to run for MISD School Board? For me, it is very simple. Failing is not an option. We have made choices as adults that have failed our students, and I can no longer sit by and watch it happen. I don't have 7 to 10 years to wait for these campuses to succeed. My first and third graders deserve better. Your students deserve better. Our district is filled with passionate, hardworking, and dedicated teachers and administrators that simply just need some support to be able to succeed. I have learned that through firsthand experience of volunteering in these schools day after day, we have all the right people. Now it's just a matter of really listening to them, so we may find out what is working and what is not. My number one goal and focus will always remain on academics. It is why we send our children to school. But I do believe that by supporting our teachers, we can see improvement in academics. I truly believe that if we can rectify the culture issue that we have across our district will improve overall. If we take the time to really support and provide the necessary tools for our teachers, our district can flourish. If we can rebuild the trust that our community has lost in our district, and quite frankly in our board, then we can communicate better and more effectively with one another. We need to communicate better with our stakeholders about decisions that the board makes and why those decisions are made. But before those big decisions are made, we need to already be actively engaged in our district and our neighborhood schools to know and understand what those campuses need to succeed. It is important that a board member understands what our community is experiencing throughout a district as well. We need to help create an environment that encourages our teachers to speak about their concerns and never worry about any form of retaliation. I do believe that focusing on positive performances in our district is honorable, but we will never grow and change if we do not acknowledge our opportunities for improvement and growth. We cannot fix what isn't working if we do not acknowledge that it isn't working in the first place. I do believe that our district can make improvements. It won't be easy, but with the right people in place, Midland can become a district that schools across Texas strive to become. I believe that community input is important, and we all need constructive criticism to grow and improve. The responsibility of a board member is to hold our superintendent accountable. It is their job, as an elected official, to represent the people that voted for them. It is their obligation to be communicative and take the time to listen to anyone and everyone that has questions, comments, or concerns. We need a representative in District 2 that is willing to listen, to ask the right questions, to educate themselves on the information that is brought to them for every meeting, and I can assure that I am prepared to do that. District 2 needs a representative that puts the effort into building relationships and understands what our community needs to constantly be better than the day before. We need a representative that not only holds the superintendent accountable, but themselves accountable as well. We should no longer settle for excuses when it comes to failing our kids. I can't promise that I will always know the answer, but I can promise that I will work tirelessly to try and find the answer. It would be an honor to represent every constituent in District 2. I am second on the ballot and hope to earn your vote. I encourage anyone that would like to further this discussion to reach out to me at misdrd2@gmail.com or message me on Facebook at Rachel Davis for MISD District 2. District 7. Brian Murray, District 7 candidate. Better days are ahead for Midland ISD. My name is Brian Murray, and I'm running for MISD Trustee for District 7. I am nearing the completion of my first term. I am running again because I believe in MISD and believe we have work left to accomplish. The board has started a process that I feel confident will bring the success that is expected and required by the outstanding people of Midland. The process does require staying the course and consistency. When I consider MISD, I think of our students, our teachers, our community, and my role in helping to bring real change, change that will result in better outcomes for our students, change that will result in a healthier environment for our teachers, and change that will restore the pride of public education to the community. I believe there are better days ahead for MISD, and I want to be a part of the story. I believe our community expects their representative to be involved. I'll admit I began my term 4 years ago a little starry-eyed, not really knowing what I could or could not affect. During my term, I have attended every public board meeting. I served as the chair of the Finance Committee for my first 2 years, and as a member of the committee for the last two. I have served on the Facility Committee for 4 years. I was an active board representative for Educate Midland for approximately 3 years. Most importantly, I have been to campuses and stayed involved as best I could through PTAs, watchdogs, dads of great students, and volunteered to read and help with math on our campuses. I believe our community expects their representative to be responsive. Believe it or not, serving as a trustee makes a person very popular. Or not. I kid. However, I have received thousands of emails, private messages, text messages, and phone calls over my term. I have tried to do my very best to answer questions to the best of my ability, or seek out answers when I do not know them. I'll admit my response rate has not been perfect, but I have been committed to being as responsive as possible. There is a delicate balance between God, my family, a full-time job, and my time devoted to the board. Lastly, I believe our community expects their representative to be a good listener. Maybe the most important lesson I've learned during my 4-year term is that our community wants to be heard and have a say in public education. As your trustee, I will continue to be the voice of District 7 and the Midland community. I will continue to be a voice for teachers and support them as best I can. And finally, I will be the voice of our students and continue to develop a brighter future, whether they choose college, career, or military. I will lead with heart, with dedication, and from experience. And that is why I feel that I am the best candidate for MISD trustee for District 7. Please vote Brian Murray on November 3.
This is the opinion page. This column is entitled, Some Biden Voters May Prefer GOP Senate, by Ramesh Panuru, Bloomberg. Every new president in the last 30 years has come to office with his party holding a majority in both houses of Congress. Three of those four new presidents lost that power quickly. One or both houses of Congress flipped to the opposition 2 years later as voters reacted to what they considered the president's excesses. The exception was George W. Bush, whose party lost Congress 6 years after his election, a day that probably had to do with the shock of the September 11th attacks in his first year in office. With the exception of that period, we have not had more than 2 years of consecutive unified control since Ronald Reagan's election in 1980. Modern Americans have not seemed to like one-party government, or at least the median modern American hasn't. Most of our polling suggests that Joe Biden will be our next president, but gives Republicans a better chance of holding the Senate. Tom Tillis of North Carolina and Joni Ernst of Iowa are in tight races. If they keep their seats, Republicans will probably retain the majority. There is a possibility, then, that Biden becomes the first president since 1989 to take office with a hostile Senate majority. Split control, combined with today's level of polarization, could create serious problems. How long would it take for Biden to get his cabinet confirmed if Mitch McConnell stays majority leader? But the election of Biden alongside a Republican Senate could also end the cycle of partisan overreach followed by backlash that we have gone through so many times over the last generation. Expanding the Supreme Court to put more liberals on it would be off the table. so probably would be ending the Hyde Amendment to allow taxpayer funding of abortion. There would be no return to fining people for not buying health insurance. In all of these cases, a Republican Senate would spare Americans from policies that, according to polls, they don't want. Biden might not really want some of them either. It would also likely mean the death of some of Biden's ambitious health care ideas, which are more popular when briefly described, but have the potential to push people out of insurance plans they like. Bipartisan negotiations over issues such as COVID relief might well bear more fruit if McConnell and Nancy Pelosi are dealing with Biden instead of the unpredictable Trump. The former vice president would, however, be able to make good on his central campaign promise, the one that both he and a decisive block of voters seem to care most about, the promise not to be Donald Trump. Biden is simultaneously running on the most progressive platform of any major party nominee in history, as former Vice President Barack Obama describes it, and a return to normalcy, as a progressive journalist puts it. A Republican Senate would mean voters got the part of that package that they want. One might think that this outcome would appeal particularly to those Republicans who left the party out of disgust with Trump. But some of them instead believe that Republicans must lose at every level as punishment for going along with Trump, and to create a new de-Trumpified GOP. Burning down the Republican Party in the hope that something better will rise from its ashes is doubly mistaken. It ignores the collateral damage. A lot of left-wing policies would get enacted in the process of this rebuilding, and any viable center-right party in the U.S. is going to be made up mostly of people, voters, staffers, politicians, who made their peace with Trump. There are too few Americans who are neither part of the progressive coalition nor Trump supporters for it to be any other way. Republicans have not exactly been profiles in courage with respect to Trump. Many of them have bitten their tongues instead of saying what they know to be true about him. But some perspective is in order. The key decision Senate Republicans made was whether to support Trump's removal from office after the House impeached him. There was a strong case for removal, but many Republicans sincerely believed the central argument against impeachment, that a president should not be removed unless he has committed a crime such as perjury. That argument may be mistaken, but it has been made every time in our history that a president has faced impeachment. Only one senator in U.S. history, Mitt Romney, has voted to remove a president of his own party. There would be a certain justice for Republicans in losing the Senate after going all in for Trump. But voters might find themselves, in short order, coming to regret some of the results. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled, City Spiritual Leaders Can Help Build Up Positive Communication, by editor Stuart Doreen. Our community is frustrated. Midlanders are on edge. They're on their last nerve. COVID-19, an oil price downturn, changing the name of a high school, the presidential election. There is so much distracting members of our community. Our relationships are frayed. I frankly can't remember the last time we saw a better version of ourselves. In this space, I have mentioned the greatest commandment. Thou shalt love the Lord thy God with all thy heart, and with all thy soul, and with all thy mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like unto it, thou shalt love thy neighbor as thyself. When our community is tired, frustrated, feeling the pressure of a down economy and concerned about children's education, it is right to wonder about our community's spiritual side. Any 12-step program will remind us that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Sometimes it feels like a community's sanity is to be questioned every time we go onto social media or every time we listen to the radio. this newspaper wants to play a part in bringing our community to a better place spiritually and emotionally. That is why today I am calling for spiritual leaders to step up and use the column inches of the Reporter-Telegram and the space at MRT.com to speak directly to our readers and community members. We believe that your words will go a long way to building the communication in a positive way, to build us up and unite us, not tear us down and divide us. Over the years, spiritual leaders have partnered with the Reporter-Telegram. A list of people who have helped this newspaper with opinion articles have included Darren Wood, Mike Hunter, Patrick Payton, Mike Gokey, Roy Smith, Michael Siss, Daniel Stevens, Bob Fu, and Randall Everett. Today, I am calling on the entire roster. I am asking readers to talk to your faith leaders and spiritual advisors to connect with us. These articles can address the tough and turbulent times in our community, the opportunities to be there for one another and for Midland, the important messages of the church seasons, and the issues that will define us and our city for the future. There will be an end to 2020. 2021 has to be better, but our community must play a greater part in the rebound. Who better to lead the way than those who guide us spiritually? This is a lot to take in. But since I have been editor of the Reporter-Telegram, we have stayed true to this community with our faith and philanthropy section, opinion articles from faith leaders, front pages dedicated to spiritual events such as Easter, and more. Faith matters in Midland. The way we treat people in Midland matters. Our relationships with each other matter. Some have been critical of the newspaper for putting an emphasis on those things that sell papers or get us page views. If you want to make the same criticism for this, my response is simple. I can only hope that a renewed emphasis on our spiritual side brings that type of attention from the community. Who will join this paper in seeking advice from our experts? Who believes our future requires many of us to hit the spiritual reset button?
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.